What's happening, everybody? Welcome to the Nats Insider Podcast yet again. Dan Kolko with you as we get close to wrapping up the 2022 season. We got a good show for you here today. Be joined in a little bit by Mike Rizzo, the Nationals general manager, president of baseball operations. We'll get Riz's thoughts on this season. Obviously disappointing in the one loss column, but some stuff in there that he has liked, that his coaches have liked, and we'll discuss some of the positives, some of the things that Riz wants to see in terms of improvement towards 2023, and we'll get to his off-season strategy to try and bolster this roster as we look ahead to next year. Also be joined by Bob Carpenter, our TV play-by-play voice for now 17 seasons here in D.C. Good buddy of mine that I have really enjoyed working with since I joined the broadcast team in 2014, and it's been a privilege filling in for him when he's taken some games off the last couple seasons. So we'll get to Bob as well and get his thoughts on another year in the books and the way that the Nationals are looking as they try and get this reboot going and get back up the standings in the National League East. But first, let's hear from Riz. He's done this thing once before in terms of turning a team with 100 lost seasons into a winner. Number of years in contention, winning division titles, and obviously the 2019 World Series. And now it's time to try and get the Nats back to that place where they're in the mix come postseason time. Had a chance to sit down with Riz just the other day to talk about his thoughts on this season, on this reboot, and on where he sees things going as we work towards 2023. Here's that conversation with Mike Rizzo.
Mike, good to see you as always, buddy. We're sitting here, we got a few games left in the 2022 season. Obviously, not the type of season that you are used to around here in terms of the overall record. So some disappointments there, but some positives to be found as well individually and in some certain areas. How do you, as an evaluator, assess this year in the big picture?
Well, in the big picture, you know, we're moving in the right direction. But in the in the current state of affairs, you know, we're disappointed. We're unhappy with where we're at. You know, the one loss record is not where we want it to be. But with that said, you know, we do see, you know, some light at the end of the tunnel. We see the development of, you know, of 8 or 9 core players that'll be on our next championship caliber club. We've made great strides in our minor league system and our player development system. And you know, the future is extremely bright, and you know, this reboot is going as planned. I think that you know, with the big Juan Soto trade to the San Diego Padres, it's made the transformation go a little bit quicker than expected.
You're a competitive guy. I've gotten to know you pretty well over the years. Losing does not hit you really well. You don't enjoy it. How has it been for you this year, the last couple of years, and just dealing with what is kind of a different flow of organizational trajectory for now to try and reboot it and get it back?
Yeah, I mean, you know, different stages of it. You know, when you know, we won the World Series in 19, we came back in 20. You know, we had in our minds, you know, going back to, you know, playoffs and having a good season. COVID hit us. The season was uncertain, and you know, we got off on a bad start. You know, a very truncated season didn't go well. Same thing with 21. We started off with a roster that we liked. We were going to compete. You know, the last season of Max Scherzer and Stras and Corbin together. So we had high expectations there. Injuries derailed us. COVID derailed us. And that's when we decided to you know, kind of embark on this reboot to get us another 10-11 year run of excellence like we had in the past. So from, you know, that trade deadline to right now, I think that things are going as expected. I think that, you know, you see the you know, the makings of a good young core group of guys. You know, you've seen our minor league system you know, be ranked you know, in the upper third of all of baseball, whatever that means to you. I see a group of players down in the minor leagues and instructional league that I saw that we haven't had here in a long time, if ever. The amount of top flight athletic prospects, both on the position player side and on the pitching side, I think is we're at a place that we haven't been before in our organization.
You mentioned that word athletic. That's something that we've heard a lot over the last couple months. And I remember I talked to you the day of the draft, right after you guys took Elijah Green with your first round pick. And that was a word that you used about him. You've used it about others. What does that athleticism in terms of young talent, we've seen it with C.J. Abrams and some others up here, what does that allow you to do going forward for the next handful of years?
Well, I think it makes him a dynamic player. You know, the C.J. Abrams of the world, in the past we've had the Trey Turners and the Harpers and the Rendones. They're two-way players. You know, they're offensive players, they're defensive players. They run the bases aggressively, and they're players that that put an emphasis on winning. And the more athleticism you have, I think the more opportunity you have to be a dynamic player and to be a game-changing type of player. So that's always the, you know, what we're shooting for in our trades, in our drafts, and when we're developing players. It's not to say that, you know, good, solid baseball players are not important, which they are, almost equally important. But when you have a dynamic of tools and speed and athleticism, I think it brings the bar up to a point that that really excites a lot of people.
Mike, the wins and losses have kind of been there or not, but I think anyone who's watched this team over the last handful of weeks is aware that the competitiveness of the roster has gotten a lot better in every ball game, fighting to the end. What is the biggest factor in that, in your eyes, over the last couple months?
Yeah, I think that I think the biggest change that we've had over the last couple of months since the trade deadline is we're playing much better defense. We have CJ at shortstop. He kind of solidified the middle of that infield, moving Luis Garcia to second base, a much more comfortable position, and Vargas being a good handy glove guy at third base, I think has really helped us pick the ball up, which improves your pitching and that type of thing. With that said, you know, this is not a try hard league. You're judged by your wins and losses. We certainly have not won nearly enough games to say that we're happy about the season at all. We're disappointed in our one loss record, but we're excited about what we see in the future. And I think that at this point in our season and in our development as a franchise, I think is exciting for not only the people in the front office and in the clubhouse, but for the fan base also.
Mike, for years now, you've built your rosters with starting pitching being a focus. I've heard you say a number of times that with starting pitching, everything is possible. Without it, nothing is possible. This is kind of a different era in baseball to an extent in the big picture, that starters aren't going as deep into ball games and we're seeing openers and things like that. Do you still feel like starting pitching is going to be the backbone of your rosters going forward? And do you think that with a couple of these young guys that we've seen and are going to see, that you have the pieces there to put together the next really good Nats rotation?
Well, I'll ask you, ask the Dodgers and the Astros and the Braves and the Mets if starting pitching is important, if that makes you a winner or not. I think you've seen that with few exceptions that starting pitching is key to winning, not only in the 162, but especially in a playoff atmosphere. And we've showed that in the past. Other teams have shown it in the past. And I still think it's paramount to being a championship caliber club. I've always said that starting pitching is the most vital part of your roster. I do believe that we have the makings of a really good young front of the rotation type of pitching prospects on the big leagues, in the big leagues now, and in the minor leagues coming to the big leagues. And I've always said that you develop three of your own, buy two in the free agent market, and win championships. And I think that we're well on our way to having the three or four homegrown starting pitchers that can pitch eventually into the front of the rotation, and it's a recipe that we've employed before. We did a really good job of it in the past, and I think that it's a tried and true formula that is going to prove us positive again.
We got one look at Cade Cavalli up here, and then unfortunately had a little minor shoulder thing. Mackenzie Gore is working his way back. We haven't seen him yet in a Nationals uniform. We hope to before the year is up. We have seen a lot of Josiah Gray this year, and there have been some really positive starts. There have been some negatives as well. How do you assess the big picture of Josiah's first full year in the majors.
That's an important point. You know, it's his first full season of pitching every fifth day in the big leagues. If we get him through that successfully, healthy, I think that's it's a big plus for him. A year of big league experience you can't buy anywhere, and he'll get that. He took the ball every 5 days. His velocity is good. His strikeout rate is good, and he has shown that he's got several things to work on to be an everyday elite front of the rotation, a starting pitcher in the big league. So he's a very intelligent pitcher, very intelligent person, and he gets it. He knows where he needs to improve. He knows what it takes to pitch in the big leagues on an everyday, every fifth day in a successful manner. And I think that with this experience under his belt, next year he's going to be better than he is this year. And in the very near future, he's going to be a guy that can pitch in the front of a rotation.
Mike, I want to ask you about one more guy that came over in that trade with Josiah last year, and that's K-Bear Ruiz. I was talking to Aníbal Sánchez recently, who said that he's seen a lot of growth from the young catcher over the course of this season.
Sure.
Have you seen that same growth from him?
We have. We've seen as a staff, especially in the video room, where you know he's really putting time in to become a game caller, a staff leader, and really take personally, you know, the ERA and the success of his pitching staff almost as much as his offensive stats. And we think that we've got ourselves our everyday catcher for the future. We've got a switch hitting catcher that has proven that he's in stretches and flashes that he could be a really good middle of the lineup major league hitter, and a guy who has a propensity to throw runners out that are trying to steal second, pick guys off at first, improving his pitch framing, been great at blocking pitches, and now that the last kind of ingredient to be an everyday impact catcher is getting the trust of his pitching staff, calling a good game, and hitting the video room with them and putting your time in. I think that he's taking strides in that regard also.
Mike, last question for you, and then I'll let you get back to work or a cigar or whatever it is that you feel like doing. You're certainly not going to tell us your exact plan for this offseason. That would be silly for you to tell us who you're going to sign here on the record. But what are your broad visions for this offseason as you try and take the young core that you've established now with some of these prospects that are coming up that you acquired through the draft or through trade, to try and get some pieces around them? How do you see this offseason going for you in your front office?
Well, I think our goal is to improve the baseball team. It's improve it in the short term and improve it in the global look of where we're going to be. So we're going to be aggressive in the trade pool, in the free agent market, in the trade market. We're going to look in the international market and any way we can to improve our baseball team and to kind of build on the core group of guys that we have in the big leagues now, the guys that will be coming in short order from the minor league system, and to pair them with the right complement of players from the outside, be it free agency or be it the trade market, to fit in with the culture here and to really aid in getting us to the next level in the near future, and that's to be a world champion again and to go on another 10, 11 year run of success.
Mike, thanks for the time, buddy. Appreciate
Pleasure.
It.
Pleasure, always.
We'll be right back. Welcome back. Well, you know this next voice that's going to come at you. You know it well. Bob Carpenter in his 17th season as the play-by-play voice on television for Nationals broadcasts on Masson. Bob's become a good buddy of mine over the years, worked with him very closely, gotten to know him pretty well, and he unfortunately has gotten to know me pretty well, which nobody really wants to do. Sat down with Bob the other day to talk about another year in the books, his 39th as a big league play-by-play guy. What this is like for him after a number of years of calling a contender, it's a different challenge. Calling games day in and day out for a team that isn't playing the best ball. And Bob has been there for some great moments in Nationals history and hopefully some in the future as well. So we'll talk about that with Bob. We'll talk about his thoughts on this reboot process and some talent that he sees from high in the broadcast booth at Nationals Park. Let's get you now, Bob Carpenter, year number 17 as the Nats TV play-by-play voice. Well, this is the treat of all treats this year on the Nats Insider Podcast. Dan Kolko with the legendary Bob Carpenter. Bob, honored to have you here with me.
The treat is all mine, Dan. Our yearly visit, and I look forward to it every year, and I'm almost made it out of town without you getting me this year.
Yep. I wasn't going to let that happen, believe me.
I'm glad you didn't, and so let's chat.
Let's chat. Another year pretty much in the books. This is year number 39 for you, calling big league baseball games. We kind of talked at this point last year just about your career and all your accomplishments. I'm just curious, at this point, you've called so many big league seasons. This one hasn't been the best for the Nats in terms of the record, but for you personally, what's it like to just go through a year like this and get to see some highs and some lows when you've already seen so much in your long career?
Yeah, it's a good question. I would preface the discussion by saying, since you and I last talked, I've accomplished nothing. So I'm still kind of the same spot I was a year ago with you. But, you know, I think about my first baseball job in 1984 with the Cardinals. They were 2 years removed from a world championship. But that year they weren't very good, and the hated Cubs won the division. You know, so with the Cardinals, a couple of years with the Mets in the early 90s, the Minnesota Twins after that for 1 year, the Texas Rangers in the late 80s. I had kind of a thing going where I was working for nobody but losing teams. And I don't know if that made me a better broadcaster. I think it made me appreciate the good times a little more. Because, you know, even in the days I had in St. Louis, we had some ball clubs that did not make the playoffs. We did not contend. Even in 1998, with the whole McGuire-Sammy Sosa thing going on, the Cubs were the ones going for the playoffs, and the Cardinals weren't. And that was a tough pill to swallow. So I think, you know, I don't think that I've ever been a part of any 100 lost seasons other than here in D.C., and now we're in kind of a different era from those ones that were, 15, 14 years ago, before Steven came along, before Bryce came along, and, of course, Jason Wirth right after that. And then everything kind of happened from there on the positive side. So it's something that I think you approach it every year. You take the season for what it is. I never think that the success of my ball club reflects upon me as an announcer or vice versa. I try to do my job every day, and As my career has gone on and I've gotten kind of toward the end here, I think it's really important for me. I was thinking about this recently. Every night when we're done, I hope our fans feel good about being a Nats fan, no matter what the result of that day or that night's ballgame was. And I think that's something to keep in mind, because our record is not going to influence how I work. And, you know, I'm going to try to do my best job, whether we're 53-101 or 101-53, and I think that's the way you have to approach it, because it's that everyday thing for 6 months.
One thing I've learned from listening to you call games and being a part of the crew for a number of years now is that regardless of the outcome, regardless of the season and the way that the team is going, it doesn't seem like your mood is impacted any. And I think that that's one thing. You hear that about managers, that they're the same guy, the good ones. They
Davey's
say this
like
about
that.
Davey,
yeah.
That they're the same guy every day. And I've tried to pick that up from you, in that you can call a 13-1 win and have a lot of fun doing it, and you can also have some fun. Yes, the result is not what you hope, but in a 13-1 loss, there's positive moments in there, and there can be some funny things that happen in the stands, or there's ways to get enjoyment out of any big league ball game that you call. And that's one thing that I've learned from you. And honestly, I think it's a skill to have that type of an approach. And so I commend you for being able to do that.
Well, thanks, Dan. I appreciate that. That really means a lot coming from
an established, you know,
a broadcaster like yourself. Yeah. No, but you know, we spend a lot of time together, and it's good that people look to me for that, or they look at me and see that, because, you know, here's a big difference between being on radio and being on TV. When you're on radio, it's usually two guys and the producer engineer, Charlie and Dave, and they have Jack sitting behind them, and they might have Slick Vic back at the studio, you know, and all those guys who help that thing back there. When you're the play-by-play guy of a TV crew, you are setting the tone for 30 people that are on that crew, or whatever the number is. And I have to think that if the play-by-play guy can't handle losing, and he's on the air not doing positive things.
That's not fun for the fans.
Yeah, and pouting. You know, there's some pouting that goes on around baseball when things aren't going well.
Yeah.
And that's from some crews that are really used to having a great amount of success, and everything goes crazy when they're losing. So I look to – it's not that I looked at myself as the most important person on the crew, but you're the one that's setting the tone on the air for what the fans are going to hear, because I think Franny's going to pick up from me my level of commitment, my level of excitement. You're going to do it too. And then I think everybody in the truck too. And, you know, those people are down there working a lot harder than the three of us ever do.
No doubt.
Because they're the ones getting here at 7 in the morning for a 1 o'clock game, and they're getting here at 2 or 3 in the afternoon for a 7 o'clock game, or sometimes sooner if it's the first game of a series. So I see myself as the guy who sets the tone for the whole crew and has a big influence on how positive the experience can be, and that's what I want to get across to the fans too.
Bob, let's talk about what you've seen from this ball club this year. Obviously, the trade with San Diego was probably the biggest moment for this ball club this season in the broad scheme of things. And in a weird way, we've seen the competitiveness level of this team increase since that trade. I think we can all, those of us that have been watching on a daily basis, and I talked about this with Mike Rizzo, this ball club has been in more games consistently since the trade deadline. I'm not saying that's at all a reflection on Juan or Josh, who we love, but what's your takeaway from the last couple months and the way that this group with some youth now, some athleticism now, has been able to, even against teams that maybe have more quote-unquote talent, been able to play with a lot of these teams?
I think it's the power of incentive is a big part of this thing, because there are a bunch of guys on this team right now who will have jobs next year with this ball club if they keep doing what they've been doing, and there might be some other guys who don't. And I think we have – Davey said it in his presser today – got a lot of young, hungry guys who come into his office, say, Skipper, we're going to be better. You know, we're going to be good. He believes it. They believe it. And, you know, you hit the nail on the head. More competitive baseball since August 2nd, which makes no sense whatsoever.
Right.
When you really think about it, with Juan gone and Josh, because Josh was a team leader and Juan was the young superstar. And, you know, we wish him well over the rest of his career. I didn't want to see him leave. And I still remember where I was the morning that I heard, hey, this deal's done and he's going. And, gosh, it was like a watershed moment for all of us. Then I started hearing about the six guys that were headed this way. And that gave me, you know, pause to think, okay, we just traded two guys, one of whom was probably not going to be here next year anyway. I don't know what they were going to do in terms of an offer for Josh. You know, and then you'd have Juan playing under that situation. Well, we offered him the money, but he didn't take it, but he's still here, which can become an uncomfortable thing, too, for a lot of players and fans. So when I heard about these kids that were on their way, the five kids plus Luke
Voigt,
you know, who claims he grew up watching me on TV in St. Louis, that he couldn't wait to tell me that the day we met here, by
That's
the way.
That's great.
Because I had never met Luke before. Our paths just never crossed. But I think Mike pulled off a great deal there. I think it's going to have long-term residual positive effects for this ball club. I hated to see Juan go, but I think the Nats traded him at the time when his value was the highest. And I think San Diego may have a few regrets, not on the Juan standpoint, but the other guys about that deal as time goes on. And I think we've got our shortstop for a long, long time. I think we've got a couple of really good outfielders that are on the way. You know, we've got Mackenzie Gore, who should be in the rotation, knock on wood, stay healthy now for the next couple of years. And then who knows about Harlene Susanna as he comes up, and who knows what kind of gas that guy is going to be bringing to the fire here in the next couple of years. So, yeah, it was a big moment for our organization. It was an unusual moment. And on the heels of what happened at trading deadline in 21, I can understand the fans being upset about it, and to a certain extent I was too. I mean, I have a partial season ticket plan. I consider myself a fan too.
You're invested just like everybody else, and that's what makes this so great. Bob, you've seen a lot of teams, a lot of successful teams, whether it's teams that you cover, whether it's teams around the league. And the Nationals now, you mentioned CJ, they get K-Bert Ruiz at the deadline last year. And you mentioned a couple of the young outfielders that are coming up in the next couple years. Luis Garcia over there at second base as well. You see now the potential for a very youthful middle of the field. And that's where a lot of teams, position player-wise, love to build. You hear GMs talk about the importance of being strong up the middle. How have you seen that in teams in your years around the league? What's the importance of that in your eyes?
Well, the first time I really realized it, I wasn't yet a big league broadcaster. I was still, I think, 2 or 3 years away. But when Whitey Herzog traded Gary Templeton to the San Diego Padres to get some kid who couldn't hit very much early in his career named Ozzie Smith, I'm thinking, we just traded a switch-hitting, power-hitting shortstop who's going to hit 20 home runs a year and drive in 80 runs for this guy, you know, who's really a good shortstop from what I hear. Well, that changed the whole thing because Ozzie became a Gold Glove shortstop. He became a Hall of Famer, taught himself how to hit. He was a 275 career hitter by the time he was done. And, he, you know, and the Cardinals were in 3 World Series in the 80s. You know, he was retired by the next time they made it. But that up-the-middle thing cannot be denied. And Whitey, I learned a lot of baseball. I hope people don't get tired of hearing me quote him from time to time. But I was a young, impressionable broadcaster. And he actually was my first manager of the first team I did in the big leagues, which was the 84 Cardinals. And he always used to say, I can wait for offense. I cannot wait for defense. And Davey and I have talked about this in his office at length, about how defense has to be there every day. And when you start with that as your foundation, that's big. So, you know, you got Victor Robles in center. If Victor can hit 250 next year, I'm expecting the batting averages to go up next year, banning the shift and all that.
I
hope it does. And if it doesn't, that means some hitters are really stubborn and they're not changing a thing that they're doing.
Right.
But if Victor could hit 245, 250 and play the great center field and throw to the right base, all those things, he's going to be good. And then, of course, CJ and Luis, who seems to be making a pretty good transition to second base, and then Kay Barrett behind the plate. Those are all kids with tremendous upside, and that up-the-middle thing could be a foundation for this ball club for a long, long time to come.
Bob, I'll let you get out of here on this one. You've, you know, covered a lot of teams, as you discussed. You're not necessarily a D.C. native. You don't live here year-round, but I know how much this city and this area has come to mean to you and this Nationals organization. I'll just give you an opportunity to speak to that and the way that this community in your, what, now 16 years here?
17th season.
17 years now has impacted you and your family in this time.
I've made lifelong friends up here that I never would have known had I stayed a Midwest boy. And, you know, people, the reason I'm here, one of the main reasons is I was doing the over-the-air games in St. Louis on one of the local commercial stations. And back in 05 and 06, the games were making the transition totally to cable. Well, they already had their own broadcast team. And I actually left St. Louis while I still had a year left on my contract there to come here because I wanted a full-time baseball opportunity. So the Nationals gave me a chance. And, you know, the Masson guys actually hired me back then. It was Bob Whitelaw and Jeff Hallis, who I just talked to today for the first time in a long time. I had a long talk with Jeff. Those were the guys who made the decision to hire me. They sent me down to RFK from Baltimore to speak with Tony Taveras, who was the Nationals team president, and Kevin Ullich, who was his right-hand man. I tell you, man, it was a day-long interview process that was grueling. Those guys wore me out, but I knew that I wanted this job really badly, and they fortunately were convinced by me. But over these last 16 and a half calendar years, these 17 seasons, I've met some of the greatest people I've ever met. You know, fans, people in the front office, broadcasters, you know, be able to get to know you and Franny and all the other guys we've had here. Chip, our producer, Dougie, our first director, and now Chuck, the most awesome guys you'd ever want to work with directing a game. And so it's been an experience. Interviewed a sitting president when President Obama came in on opening day. I think it was in 09, and spent a full inning with Rob Dibble and me. And Dibble's a whole nother story for another interview. But I had fun with Rob. You know, my first opening day here, Dick Cheney threw out the first pitch, and I happened to MC the thing. So it's been a really interesting ride. I never pictured myself as an East Coast guy. I have to admit, when the season's over and the grind's over, I look forward to going back home to Oklahoma, because back there, I'm Debbie's husband, I'm Katie's dad, I'm Allison's dad, and nobody cares whether I'm on the air or not. And that's kind of refreshing for me because I don't seek that limelight all the time. And I just want to say thanks to Nats fans, because I think it took them a year or two to get used to me. And by the way, guys, it took me a year or two to get used to you, too. But since then, in my opinion, it's been a wonderful relationship. And I'm encouraged every day by the feedback I get from our fans, in person, on Twitter, whatever. And with all the things I've done in my 47 years now of broadcasting, this job has without a doubt been the highlight of my career.
Well, for me personally, Bob, I truly have enjoyed getting to know you over the years, especially the last few as our relationship has gotten closer. And I love you, buddy, and can't say enough good things about you. And I appreciate you sitting down with me yet again.
Well, thanks for having me on, Dan. And for those who are listening saying, is Bob saying goodbye? Well, no, I have a contract. I have a contract for next year. We're still signed through 2023. But next year will be my 40th year in the big leagues, and I'll be 70 years old. So I'm sure Debbie Carpenter and Bob will be having some discussions about that, and we'll see where we go from there. But a year from now, I'll still be sitting in the chair with you and Franny and all of us hanging out together.
And we love it. Thanks, buddy.
Thank you.
That'll do it for the Nats Insider podcast, and that'll do it for the 2022 season. It's been a lot of fun bringing you guys these shows pretty much every week throughout the season. Hope you've enjoyed them. My thanks this week to Mike Rizzo, to Bob Carpenter for joining me. My thanks to our entire Curly W Productions crew for helping facilitate these interviews and the production of it. You guys are fantastic. And thanks to everybody for listening all season long. Looking forward to bringing you some off-season content. And obviously, we'll be back with a lot of good stuff from spring training in West Palm Beach to start off 2023. Already looking forward to getting this going again next year. Have a great one, everybody. We'll talk to you this off-season. And we'll see you down in West Palm Beach and back at Nationals Park for opening day next year. Go big or go home.